Hello and welcome to another edition of the End Zone Podcast. My name is Eric Jensen and I am joined with three guests. Wow, this is a strange podcast because it is a mailbag podcast. We are going to go through, it's the NFL dead season. I've done a terrible job of putting out podcasts. So however long this podcast is, hopefully it doesn't last more than like 2 hours, but maybe it will. We are going to dig into all these questions that we got on Twitter. We have about 14 or 15, and some of them are pretty in-depth. And any questions that maybe spur off of those questions, we are going to talk about. But we are here now. A little bit of an introduction for everyone. We will start with my friend, Matt Pierce. How you doing, Piercy? How's life kicking right now? What's going on, my man? I know you have family in town, you said?
Yeah, my mom surprised me on Tuesday. Didn't let me know she was coming to town. So we've had her in town. We got her in town on next Thursday, which is always a bonus. Got a sweet back scratcher going on over here. If you haven't noticed, feeling good. Besides that, life is good. Working a crappy job. Hoping to get a job offer tomorrow, maybe. We'll see. Yeah.
Where are you working right now, Pierce?
Just with some teleperformance action.
Oh, that's cool.
Just so I can claim myself employed.
That's lit. Also joining us, Brian Willis. How you doing, Brian?
Good, Eric. Doing good.
In the signature wife beater I see, just kind of kicking it.
How's the bro tank?
How's the weather out there in old Wisconsin right now?
It's warm.
Warm.
Very, very warm. I think it was 80 today. We've got about 90% humidity going on. Typical Wisconsin summer. But
Wisconsin gets humid?
Yeah, it does. Really humid, actually. But after the winter we had, I'm not going to complain.
All right. And, of course, you say kosher all the way from Chicago. How you doing, you said?
I'm doing well. It's I just started a new job, so that's going really well. I'm working at Starbucks now, so if you guys need free coffee, you're ever in Chicago, let me know, and I'll get you guys free Starbucks.
I hate coffee. I do like the Starbucks, the mixed lemonade drink where they do lemonade iced tea, the Arnold Palmers that they make, especially with some green tea lemonade. Oh, it's delicious. It's good stuff out there. Do you know how to make that drink yet?
Yeah, I'm learning that, in the process of it. So, yeah. Hopefully, right. If you're ever in Chicago, I'll make your Starbucks drink for you. And it'll be free because while I'm working, I get free drinks. So you can have my free drink for the day.
Oh, well, that's lit, you said. Thank you very much. I actually might be in Chicago. I'm trying to do, a big trip next summer to some part of the United States. I might be in the Midwest. Who knows? But, I will definitely let you know. Anyways, we are going to dive right into the mailbag, unless you guys have anything else.
No, sir. I'm just here to serve.
Anything NFL related that's popped across the wire for any of you guys recently that you're interested in?
I mean, we are another day closer to the Cleveland Browns domination season, but I'm told that I talk too much about that. So
it's actually been pretty quiet.
Yeah, yeah. It's the dead part. It's the dead portion of our fine league calendar. So we will start with Usaid put out a tweet. We'll start with some of his questions from let's start with this one. I love this question. I think it's interesting, and I think the way we should do it is we should each take – well, I'll read the question first, and then I'll explain how I think we should do it. At Icewater Olson, JT Olson asks, who is the biggest threat to each of the division winners from last year? And I think we should all go around and take two divisions. Now, this could be a total cluster – but we're not going to call the divisions, just kind of off the top of your head. We'll start with Usaid. Who are the biggest threats to the division winners? Pick two random divisions and give me who you think they are.
All right. So to keep this thing simple, I'll go with one AFC and one NFC because there's four of us, right? So I'll pick the AFC and NFC West. Now, in the West, we had the Chiefs winning last year, so I believe that this year the Chargers are a big threat, provided that that team can actually like stay healthy, because it seems like they are healthy, you know, but it seems like every single year there's just one guy that like goes down in training camp or something, which derails their hopes. And then in the NFC West, right, we had the Rams winning the in 2018. I firmly believe that with the draft that the Seahawks had, with some of the young talent that they have on the roster, that the Seahawks are a big threat to the Rams. Now, the Rams are still going to be very good, but I feel like they're going to get hit with a Super Bowl hangover. And then also Todd Gurley's knees in question, because I know they say he's going to be okay, but if you got arthritis as a football player, it concerns me, because he's a running back and he gets hit a ton, you know. So you don't know how Gurley's knee is going to hold up, which I think could really have an impact on the Rams' 2019 season.
Yeah, I think that and we can kind of spur off and kind of discuss those two. Would you guys kind of tend to agree with that? I, for one, have an interesting thought on the Chargers. I'm always really into the Chargers, of course, but I don't know if the Chargers are the biggest threat in the AFC West. They probably are, but I don't see the Chargers being as good this year as they were last year. I feel like Phillip Rivers is due. He's an older quarterback. I feel like Phillip Rivers is due for a step back. Am I crazy to think that?
No, I'm just surprised it's the first year I've ever heard you say anything, Nick, semi even negative about the Chargers.
I mean, I look at some of the other teams in the AFC West, and you've got the Chiefs, the Chargers, the Raiders, and the Broncos. And the Chargers are an obvious pick in this division, because they're the second most talented team in the division. Eric, I know you're probably going to get pissed off at this, right? But I just don't see the Raiders. I don't see them going anywhere, because they still have – I know they added Antonio Brown, added Josh Jacobs to this offseason, but they still have some holes on the roster. And then the Broncos, right? You know, I'm just not sold on the quarterback position, and I think that that's just going to continue to hold them back. Can Drew Lock be good? Yes. But it's going to be for Denver, and this comes from watching Vic Fangio be the defensive coordinator of my team for a number of years. I do not see, you know, in Denver, the defense is going to be what holds this team together until the offense begins to really figure it out.
Yeah, I don't think you're wrong in thinking about it. I don't know. I just see the Chargers kind of taking a little bit of a step back last year. Honestly, I think the biggest threat to the Chiefs is honestly are we getting a call?
No, that was my error, sir. I do apologize. It won't happen again. Please don't beat me.
It's okay. I think the biggest threat to the Chiefs are the Chiefs. I think Tyreek Hill's suspension, whatever that will be, could hurt this team a lot. And I do think that's an interesting point. Brian, why don't you go now?
Since Usaid went with the West, I'll go with the East. AFC East is pretty straightforward. It's the Jets are probably going to be the biggest threat to the Patriots. There's nothing much to worry about with Miami and Buffalo, in my opinion. And then in the NFC East, this division is always never what you think it'll be. You know, honestly, it should be – the Eagles should be the biggest threat to the Cowboys, who won it last year. But, I mean, you honestly never know. Washington could come out of nowhere. These teams – the year that the Eagles won the Super Bowl, they came out of nowhere. Nobody saw that coming, especially with Nick Foles. So, I'm going to say the Eagles.
Anyone have any thoughts on those?
I just think the Eagles took a step back at quarterback.
Really?
And I'm not a Nick Foles guy. I think the guy is a Carson Wentz guy. I think he can't stay on the field. I don't think that's going to change. I think they just paid that guy a crap ton of money to play on the sidelines on the injury reserve list. Hopefully, you know, I'm not hoping he gets injured, but history seems to be continuing every year with this guy. I think they should have kept Foles, and I think I'm going to be proven right this year, so run with that.
Yeah, the small sample size that you saw when Wentz was in was pretty darn good, but I also trust Doug Peterson as a head coach and his talent evaluation skills. So as much as I want to doubt Wentz, I got to trust Doug Peterson.
Yeah, I doubt Carson Wentz's health too. I think I've kind of started doing these team by team preview things, and I'm only like nine teams through, but the teams I have really looked at closely are NFC East, North, and South team, and one South team, I guess. So East and North teams. I think that the Eagles have maybe the most talented roster in the NFL outside of running back. I don't buy their running back situation, but I think that Pierce, you're right. The biggest obstacle for them is going to be Carson Wentz's health. I think that he can stay healthy, though, and I'd absolutely agree with Brian. I think the AFC East, I would disagree with the Jets. Again, I'd say the Patriots' biggest problem, I would say, is themselves. The front seven is extremely weak and lost a lot this offseason, especially losing Trey Flowers in free agency. I think that the Patriots' biggest problem will be, can the defense perform, as we kind of go into every year asking. I don't know. I don't see the Jets being that great or threatening the Patriots at all, honestly.
I mean, honestly, you know, you touched on the Patriots losing Trey Flowers, but they did this past draft at Chase Vinovich in the third round, the edge rusher from Michigan. And again, I'm not going to go ahead and say that he's going to be like, you know, a Pro Bowler or just immediately burst onto the scene, but Vinovich can play. And I feel like, because Belichick does this every year with one of his late round picks, he figures out a way to make these guys like super effective. And I've used this term on this podcast a number of times. I just feel like it's going to be the Bill Belichick effect, you know? I think really with the Jets, I'm going to go ahead and agree with Brian, because New York did have one of the best the Jets, right? They had one of the best free agencies this offseason with all the talent they added. Obviously, you have that question of Le'Veon Bell. Is he going to be 110% NFL ready when week one does roll around? Because this guy hasn't played in almost a year and a half now. And then obviously on the defense, like, they did add CJ Mosley, but the way they lost out on Anthony Barr kind of sucks for them. But I do see the Jets just, I see the Jets or the Bills coming in second in the AFC East.
All right, Pierce.
My two. So I think I'm going to take a real leap here. Actually, I probably agree with what you say. Just said, sorry, I've been multitasking, trying to be a superstar today and failing terribly. I do think the Jets are going to upset the AFC East and take out the Patriots. I think the raid, not for the playoffs. I think they'll make the playoffs, but I think Patriots won't win the East this year. And then, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious if you've ever listened to Matt Pierce talk. The next guess I'm going with is the Browns are going to overtake the AFC North from the Ravens. I think the Ravens are going to have a huge fall back into third place in that division. I just think that that roster is too talented to fail, even with a rookie head coach. I know there's a lot of temperamental attitudes in that room, but Cleveland all the way. So I'm going to go Cleveland and the Jets. Are the teams to overtake their divisions.
All right. Well, that was kind of the opposite of how we've been doing it. So do you...
Well, I failed. I quit. I'm walking out.
Okay. I'll do three. Okay. So NFC North, I'll say the Vikings have the best chance of overtaking the Bears. I put out this question on Twitter in poll form if people thought Kirk Cousins year two would be different than year one. I very firmly think yes. Year two is going to be much better for Kirk Cousins. And it kind of shocks me that I know he struggles in the biggest moments, but still statistically, Kirk Cousins had his career best year last year. And they didn't really lose a ton on offense, and they gained Gary Kubiak, who I think is solidly one of the best running back running game coordinators in the NFL, and that's where they struggled the most last year was at running. They ranked 27th in the league. I think the running game is going to be a lot better, even though the backfield's extremely thin, in my opinion. I think the offense is going to be great, and I think the defense is going to be good. And I think the Vikings are a very slept-on team going into 2019. I think they have the best chance of overtaking the Bears, followed very closely by the Packers. Brian, I'm sorry I went with the Vikings, but I trust the Vikings defense more than I do the Packers, even though the Packers have improved a lot over this offseason. And I will come on this podcast and say I have been wrong about the Packers wide receiving core. I took a very close look at it. I think it is one of the most underrated in the NFL. And while, yes, I still believe they should have been more aggressive and added more, I think that there is a real chance that that team improves. So I will take now the Souths. I think in the AFC South, the Colts are the clear and obvious answer to overtake the Texans. I think the Colts are one of the best run organizations in the NFL at this point. I think that they are going to be much better year two under Frank Reich. I think they added a lot this offseason. And then the NFC South, I think the best shot to overtake the Saints would have to be the Atlanta Falcons. And I know I might surprise a lot of people saying that, but I think the Falcons were torn apart by injuries last year, and they are going to be a much better team in 2019.
You know, I'd agree with your take on the NFC North. I mean, and this is coming from a Bears fan, you know, because there's two sides to me if you're listening to this. There's the fan side, and then there is the writer side and the analyst side. And as an analyst, you know, I'm going to be 100% honest. If the Bears want to repeat in 2019, it's going to depend on Trubisky, right? And I do believe that the Vikings, because they have on paper the second most talented overall roster in the division, especially on defense. I think if you take Khalil Mack out of the equation for the Bears, and a lot of Bears fans are going to hate me saying this, you take Khalil Mack out, the Bears have basically the same caliber defense as do the Vikings. And for the Vikings, I do think Kirk Cousins is really going to put it together in year two. You have to remember that for a lot of these NFL quarterbacks, the first year that they're in a system, they kind of struggle because you're playing with new guys, you're getting adjusted. It's basically learning an offense on the fly. The second year, though, things do begin to slow down for you, and I think that's what will happen the Vikings, especially with Gary Kubiak there. If he can at least get the run game going, get Dalvin Cook to be consistent, then it takes a hell of a lot of pressure off Kirk Cousins, which will in turn allow for Stephon Diggs, Adam Thielen, some of these other guys, Kyle Rudolph, to just post better numbers overall.
Yeah, I think those are two good points. Okay, let's move on to our next question. That was a great question by JT Olson. Thanks for sending that in. Austin F. asks an interesting question. At UncleMike21 on Twitter asks, who has the better year, the Arizona Cardinals or the Oakland Raiders? We'll start with Brian here.
That's a really good question. If Cliff Kingsbury can pull it together, I don't see any reason why the Cardinals can't have a 7 or 8 win season. But boy, there's a lot there that is just highly questionable. You drafted three, in my opinion, very talented wide receivers. You brought in Kyler Murray to run your offense, who, you know, people say that Big 12 doesn't really have the defense in college. So it'll be interesting to see how Kyler does. Man, I want to say Arizona. I'm going to go Arizona. I have no faith in John Gruden whatsoever. My pick is Arizona.
Is that your final answer?
Yes.
You know, for me, and I'll go a second here, right? I mean, I look at some of the moves that the Raiders made in the draft. Some of them are questionable to me. I don't get why they took Cleveland Farrell at fourth overall. That's where they were picking, I believe. But anyway, that was just a questionable pick to me because there were better guys like Brian Burns on the board that they could have gone with, who I think Burns was the steal of the first round this year. I don't get the point of taking Josh Jacobs in the first round because, yeah, the kid may be talented, but this was one of those drafts where you could have really gone and gotten a good running back on day two or three, especially day three from rounds 4 to 7. So I'm looking at what the Cardinals are doing, and I feel like the Cardinals are going to be better than the Raiders this year, but not significantly better. I think that both of these teams are still going to end up picking in the top five of next year's draft. And, you know, just regarding the Cardinals, I know everyone wants to say that, oh, Kyler Murray was their best pick, which I feel like Kyler being the franchise or, you know, the face of that franchise, he was their best pick. But honestly, just looking at their draft, I feel like they got a very underrated cornerback in Byron Murphy. And then really a steal for them was the fifth round, Deontay Thompson from Alabama, the safety. You know, he was a guy that slipped because he had a injury. I think it was a wrist injury during the combine. But still, I think Thompson was the steal of the for the Cardinals.
What about you, Pierce?
Oh, I think it's Raiders all day. I think Kyler Murray is going to be one of those epic busts we're talking about 10 years from now. And I've been saying it since before the draft. Everyone keeps laughing at me. I just want you guys to still be there when I'm proving you wrong and dominating with my takes, because I'm 100% sure that guy is going to be a failure.
I think that I'd have to go with the Cardinals, just because outside of Antonio Brown and Tyrell Williams, the receivers don't really have any receiving threats out of those top two, outside of those top two guys. And if one of them goes down, this offense is really thin at pretty much every position. If you lose either, if you lose Josh Jacobs, Tyrell Williams, or Antonio Brown, if you lose one of those three guys, this offense becomes, again, just one of the worst in the league. And I think that I kind of side with Pierce. I'm not sure if I fully buy into Kyler Murray, but I think that the Cardinals have a much deeper offense than the Raiders do, and a much deeper defense than the Raiders do. I have been pounding the table forever for Chandler Jones. I think he's one of the most underrated pass rushers in the entire league. He consistently has 15 to 16 sack seasons and is constantly underappreciated. I think the Cardinals have a better year.
Well, you're wrong, but that's okay. I'll still be on your show.
All right. Let me hold on. I gotta get back to Twitter here really quick. Do I minimize this? Yeah, that's how I do it. Let's go with Brian. This is terrible podcasting. There are a few more questions from Usaid. Here we go. Here's one. This one should be pretty quick. Due to the loss of offensive weapons on the Chiefs, will Mahomes throw over under 35.5 touchdowns? And that's from AWA, a washed up dryer on Twitter, JP. I'll start here. I think he throws over that. I think 35 is an insanely low number to set that over under at. I think year two, the offense is going to take a major step forward, as most offenses do, as you say, was saying a little bit earlier. I don't think he's going to have a 50 touchdown season, but I think he's going to be somewhere between 40 and 45 touchdowns this year, even without Tyreek Hill for a while.
So, you know, for me, right, first off, JP, that's a awesome Twitter handle. It's got me cracking up. But, you know, the deal with Mahomes is this, is he had a phenomenal season last year. And I'm going to go ahead and say he hits that ballpark of that 35 touchdowns right around there. Because the deal is, I just feel like all it takes in the NFL is one defensive coordinator to figure a player out, especially a quarterback. And from there on out, everyone starts copying that strategy. So I think it can go both ways. Do I expect the Chiefs offense to slow down? Probably not. But I wouldn't go ahead and be like, oh, they're going to be like just crazy explosive and just run over everyone. I think that if one defensive coordinator does somehow figure Mahomes out, then you're not going to see the end of Patrick Mahomes. You're just going to see the Chiefs offense slow down a bit.
Back scratch action. You going to go, Brian, or what? What's up?
Sure. I think, yeah, 35 is a pretty easy number for Mahomes to hit in year two. I really don't see a problem with or without Tyreek Hill. In fact, just because even in the, leading up to the draft, Mecole Hardman and Pringle are two guys that I really liked at wide receiver. I think it's pretty easy for him to hit that mark.
Yeah, I agree. I think definitely he's going to go over that mark. That guy has got way too much talent. As he proved last year, he is a phenomenon. So I refuse to bet against him at this point until he fails me, and then I will destroy his soul.
Wow, that's strong words. All right, next question from at Nico underscore Stadler. And this is interesting. There are four different categories he wants to go with. Who will have the best rushing offense, passing offense, rushing defense, and passing defense in the NFL? We'll each choose one. I'll start out. I want to take rushing offense. I think that it's the Ravens, and I don't think it's particularly close. I know that you think they're going to take a major step back. But this, Pierce, but this to me is one of the fastest squads in the entire NFL. I think that Justice Hill is an incredible steal, was an incredible steal in the draft. I think he's going to be great. Mark Ingram really fits their ground and pound system super well there. I think Lamar Jackson is still going to be incredibly talented as a runner. I think Gus Edwards is incredibly underrated as a rusher, as well as Kenneth Dixon, who showed a little bit last year. I think they have the deepest backfield in the entire NFL, and I think they are going to be the league's leading rushing team in 2019.
Hold on. I just threw up in my mouth a little bit. Okay, I'm better now. Go ahead.
All right, so I'll take the second category on Nico's thing, which, by the way, Nico's a European NFL fan, guys, so I have to give him props for answering my thread, because it's probably like 4 in the morning there when I put this tweet out. But anyway, back to football. So best passing offense, I'm going to go ahead and say it's the Browns, and the reason being is because they've added so much talent this offseason. On paper, that when you look at it, they have Odell, they have Jarvis, and then you look at some of the guys they have in the backfield. I know there was some discontent with, you know, or some controversy with Duke Johnson, but they have Kareem Hunt and Nick Chubb, which I think those two will form one of the better 1-2 duos in the league. And then you do look at Baker Mayfield. He is in the second year of his system. So a Freddie Kitchens system, right? So there will be that continuity there. But one thing that I just want to acknowledge, because Pierce is doing a little dance over here on camera. One of the things that concerns me about the Browns, right, is the fact that their head coach, just like 6 months ago or a couple months prior to getting the job, right, the guy was a position coach. And he got elevated to offensive coordinator. So it will be very interesting to see how a first-time head coach that has limited coordinator experience just handles the personalities that they have in the room. I mean, I like the Kitchens promotion because he had that great relationship with Baker Mayfield. But how Kitchens handles the entire team will really be interesting to watch.
Let me step in before Pierce says anything. I would entirely disagree with your kitchen steak. I think he is one of the most capable head coaches in the NFL as a young guy. From everything I've heard from him, he is the one guy out of this whole crop of new coaches that we've gotten this year that I am not worried about a bit. I think that he will be he's down to earth. I think that Baker Mayfield is going to be the main leading presence in that locker room. I think Odell Beckham really respects Baker Mayfield. I think Jarvis Landry would die for Baker Mayfield. I think that Kareem Hunt is going to learn how to put up with the culture there or get kicked out. And I don't see any quote unquote culture issues with this team at all. I think they are a very strong group of players with some really good leadership figures on the team.
Eric, are you trying to stroke my ego tonight? Because it's working. It is working.
I mean, I don't know how the Browns' success of their locker room would have to do with your ego, but okay.
Well, I am
part of the other. What were the other two categories?
First off, I am part of the Browns.
Rushing defense and passing defense, which I will also categorize. Passing defense can also would also be categorized, I would say, as pass rush. So, Pierce, why don't you choose between one of those two?
What were they? Sorry, one more time.
Running defense and passing defense.
Well, here's the deal. I'm gonna stay in C-Town. This is easy. I think Cleveland's gonna have one of the best running defenses in the league this year, with the additions that they've made to that defense, and with the guys who, oh my goodness, I just had a complete brain. I just watched them do box jumps with like 50-pound weights. Only the greatest rookie.
Schoster?
No, in the end. Miles Garrett, just going to continue to improve, especially with the help he's got. I think it's going to be a tough team. I think they're going to be the toughest team to run in the league this year. And that's not even me being a homer like I usually am. That's my actual truth opinion.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. Larry Ogunjobi, they add Olivier Vernon, obviously a very good passive, and Sheldon Richardson, who I think is one of the most underrated pickups of the offseason for the Browns. He's a terrific run stuffer. And as I said before, Joe Schobert, who became one of my favorite. Schobert, who became one of my favorite players to watch on Game Pass last year and who I think is incredibly underrated. I would absolutely agree with you. I think the running defense at Cleveland is going to be very good.
So I guess that leaves me with passing defense. Honestly, I can see now that Jacksonville has Nick Foles, they've got balance. I can see that defense bouncing back and being the best passing defense in the league this season.
We are going to jump over to the questions from the End Zone Pub thread now. Thanks again very much, Issei, for sending out those questions. We'll get Pierce's questions out of the way first. Who is the better podcaster, you or Matt Pierce? I can't be objective in this, and neither can Pierce.
It's 100% Matt Pierce. It's
incredibly awkward. Who's the better podcaster, you say?
You know, Pierce is probably going to hate me for saying this, but I'm going to go Eric, because every time I'm on Eric's podcast, right, Eric brings this energy, this unparalleled level of energy and enthusiasm, which you don't see out of a lot of podcasters.
Fake news.
Brian.
I don't know. Next question.
No, Pierce brought this on himself by asking these
questions. Well, I know the truth because I'm correct. I'm the best. Even when I'm not the best, I'm the best.
All right. Well, what is your greatest memory of the Matt Pierce and Pierce of Mine podcast? I would say my greatest memory is when I made Pierce want to kill me by pretending like I had stolen his best friend, Kevin Tenney, away from him.
Oh, yeah.
So that would be my favorite moment.
My favorite moment was the fear that it caused you when you set me off the rails.
I like watching to see when Kevin Tenney's cat's tail like pops up in the screen. I get a kick out of that every time.
Bones plays a huge role in our show.
All right.
Let me just answer that question, right? But yeah, I haven't been on Pierce's podcast.
Little bit of heat.
But whatever. You know, I remember my favorite, so I'll change the question up. And my favorite memory of Matt Pierce on the End Zone podcast was when it was like right before last season, right? And Pierce just goes on this rant and starts swearing about how much the Browns suck, even when they had Baker on their roster.
A tough look.
And now all of a sudden you see Pierce as like the biggest
bandwagon much.
biggest goddamn Browns fan on the damn planet.
First off, if I was hating on the Browns, it had to be the front office. There's highly doubting I was hating on the actual team. And I am the biggest Browns fan of the planet. And what was it? I saw you mention on Twitter, I think it was Eric, about band. Oh, no, it was your freaking last podcast that I listened to. You're talking about bandwagon fans or whatever. Or blind fans, I apologize. Blind fans that, like myself, I think you're kind of insinuating the fact. But I have blind passion and love for my team, yes, but I'll also call them out when necessary. And I'm guarantee you, it's probably when they fire Hugh Jackson, which I still thought was a mistake to fire before the end of the year. And I was probably going off. That's probably fair. But I will call my team out when necessary.
Well, see, here's the thing, right? You have to realize is that if the Browns don't fire Hugh Jackson before the end of the year, you don't see Baker Mania take over. You don't see them finish 7-8-1. And you probably don't see or get Freddie Kitchens as your head coach. Right now we'd be sitting as some random guy, probably not Kitchens, coaching the Browns. And, we'd be starting all over with Baker.
Eric, I just want to make this comment, and I promise I won't, because I know how upset you are about the Browns being on your podcast. But I'll strongly disagree, because I still think the offensive coordinator gets fired. I still think Kitchens takes over and does a great job. Maybe they don't have the same record, but I still think he ends up as head coach. And Baker's Baker. I don't think you were ever going to stop Baker from being phenomenal.
All right. Okay. So let's move on to the next question. Back to football. And let's go with our good friend Ian Kuzik at EMM Kuzik. Which rookie wide receiver gets the most yards this season? Now, I want to throw this to Brian, but maybe we'll throw it to Yusei first, because I feel like Yusei knows the most about rookies just because of all the draft research he does. Do you have anyone in mind right now, Brian, or do you need a second?
No, I'm good. I think it's actually a fairly tight race between N'Keal Harry and DK Metcalf. I would consider JJ or Jacob Whiteside as an honorable mention, but he's kind of buried on the depth chart there. I mean, you've got Metcalf and Harry that are just plugging into the starting second wide receivers on each of their teams. Although there is sort of a wild card there in New England. If Josh Gordon comes back by the start of the season, it'll be interesting to see if what they do there with their wide receivers.
You know, I'm going to agree with Brian on the first two names he mentioned. I do believe all throughout the draft process, I had N'Keal Harry and DK Metcalf as my first two wide receivers on my big board. So why DK slipped that far was just beyond me. You know, there were just people just had questions about him because, like, when you get a wide receiver that absolutely goes out like DK did and just dominates the combine, what happens is people begin to question the hype around this guy, because the last guy that happened to was Kevin White. And then we all know how Kevin White's season ended. But, you know, I think Nikhil is going to emerge as the number one guy in this class. The reason being is because he's playing with the Patriots. You can line him up all over the field, and he's going to have an impact. Nikhil's last season at ASU was cut short due to a neck injury, but he looks good to go. You know, he looks like he's back to being important, his former self. I know Brian mentioned a wild card, so I think there are two wild cards for me. One's going to be Andy Isabella, who was drafted by the Eagles. He's going to be a slot receiver. I feel like he will end up being a big part of their offense, just in terms of receiving. And then the second guy, I think, would be Riley Ridley of the Bears. Just the deal with him is he's an excellent route runner. He's big. He's physical. I know that there's a hell of a lot of wide receivers in Chicago, but I feel like Ridley's good enough to the point where by the end of the year, he could be the wide receiver three for that team.
All right. So I will go with DK Metcalf, I think. I know that's another person on here's answer, but I just don't know that much about rookie wide receivers. And I think that that Russell Wilson really has no one else to go to out there, whereas Tom Brady has Edelman still and some decent targets around him. So I think that it is going to be DK Metcalf who will be the best rookie wide receiver.
You know, had you asked this question a month ago, it almost would have been pretty easy to say Mecole Hardman, because it looked like Tyreek Hill was probably not going to be playing.
Yeah, that's another question that Nico asked that I skipped, but we'll come back to it just really quick. And we'll start with you, Pierce. How many games do you think Tyreek Hill will be suspended?
Do
you think the NFL will give him?
No, I think they'll fail. They'll give him four instead of the six he deserves. But yeah, I think four.
Well, I think six is even light. If I were Commissioner Roger Goodell, I'd give him. If everything that in that situation plays out to be right, I think that he deserves the Ray Rice treatment. I think an indefinite suspension is probably in order for him.
I'll say Rice got shafted. There's a rule in the books. Like, okay, maybe Rice didn't get shafted because the rule wasn't there yet. But the rule says six.
Oh, Pierce, this is a dangerous road you're going down.
I don't have to. I'm not. It's not my personal belief. There's a rule that says six games. If the league has any integrity, then it has to stick to its rules. Change the rules so it's not a set number of games and you don't have these problems. But right now, there is a set number of games that they can't seem to stick to. Same thing with Winston down in Tampa last year. What do you get, three games, four games when it's supposed to be six? I don't agree with the rule. The rules are there. The rules are there for a reason. They're in place. If they're wrong, fix them. But you can't over-punish a guy because you morally think it's incorrect. What he did was wrong. I believe what he did morally was wrong. I think he should be benched for at least a year or eight games minimum. But that being said, the rules are six. You have to follow the rules or just fucking throw out the handbook.
Well, see, here's the, you know, and I'm not going to agree or disagree with Pierce, right? But the deal is this is I don't understand why people get, you know, when the NFL doesn't follow its rules, right? People just get pissed off. And when stuff like this comes out, it's just like the guy gets like whatever, three or four games. And it's like, oh, just move on with it. And people are pissed off that the NFL's gotten it wrong. The NFL hasn't gotten, when these situations come up, because there's at least one player every year, the NFL fails to get it right every single time. They always get it wrong. So the Tyreek Hill situation isn't going to be any different. I'm going to go ahead and say here that you're going to see Tyreek Hill back on the field by mid-October. So you're looking at it, you know, when the season's starting the second week of September, he's going to be back. the first week of October, or it's just going to be mid-October. But regardless, Tyreek's going to end up playing. Personally, because I know the NFL is going to end up doing that, but personally, coming from me, he deserves like at least a year, and he should have to take some like counseling classes to get his freaking head right. Because the same, you know, he got involved in this DV case and while in college, you know, got kicked out of OSU, went to Southern Alabama, and then there, you know, had to take like a couple different classes and whatnot just to get his head straight, which is why he slipped so much in the 2016 draft. It needs to be the same case here. Tyreek deserves to be suspended for a full year, and he should have to take classes, but we all know it's not going to happen. He's going to be back playing like within the blink of an eye.
Brian?
Yeah, I think it was Adam Schefter that tweeted about a week and a half ago that he's looking at a four-game suspension. Now, honestly, I can't see him contesting that because it would be pretty insulting to a lot of people for Tyreek Hill to appeal that, only getting four games for what is currently an alleged domestic abuse case where he broke a three-year-old's arm. If you appeal that, if I'm Roger Goodell, and Roger Goodell wouldn't do this, obviously, but if Goodell issues him a four-game suspension and you appeal that, I'm Roger Goodell, and I say, fine, it's just a lifetime ban, man.
All right. Okay, let's lighten up the mood a little bit. Here's a question for you. Let's all go around and name one breakout rookie we think we'll have this year. I want to go before you say, because I don't want you say to steal mine. Because the guy I'm thinking of plays on USAID's team, David Montgomery. I am buying it. I don't know. I don't do a ton of draft study, but I watched like three or four Iowa State games last year, and I am totally bought into this guy. I think he's going to be an absolute stud. I would not be surprised if he steals the starting job from Tariq Cohen at some point this year. I think he is one of the most talented young backs in the league right now, and I think he's going to have a great year.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to agree with that just because, you know, I didn't release my, like, draft positional rankings this year just because I wasn't as involved in the process. But a lot of the studying that I did was David Montgomery was my running back number one for this class. Just in terms of when you're looking at fits, what the Bears did is they trade up 14 spots from 87 to 73 for him. And they did give up a couple of mid-round draft picks, right? But the reality of it is that Montgomery's Kareem Hunt 2.0, without all the DV stuff, by the way, that's probably a joke I shouldn't be making, but whatever, you know. But the deal with Montgomery, right, is I've heard a lot of things. He's already impressing as a wide receiver. He's impressing just when he runs. You see that he's been watching Walter Payton highlights. He's working on his footwork. So Montgomery, I feel like, is going to be off – because we're talking about rookies, right? I'm going to say Montgomery goes in his offensive rookie of the year this year. Over Kyler, by the way, because Kyler's getting a hell of a lot of hype, but I believe it's going to go to Montgomery.
Kyler's a bust.
What do you think, Brian?
Lock it up.
Well, first of all, I've been watching a lot of Walter Payton highlights, so you get NFL better watch out. secondly, I think Josh Jacobs in Oakland will get a lot of, well, with the Raiders will get a lot of attention. As far as we can tell, Gruden doesn't like his quarterback, but when you've got Tyrell Williams and Antonio Brown on the outside, you're not going to be able to load up the box against the run game. And I think Jacobs will do really well.
Absolutely.
Fake news.
Any rookie breakouts for you, Pierce?
I got a strong feeling in Minnesota about Garrett Bradbury. I think he is going to help solidify that line. He's going to help protect Kirk Cousins,
which Minnesota needs. That line was
coming off
last year,
one of their best years, one of his best statistical years, and still was a failure. So he needs all the protection he get. So I'm going to go.
Also, that offensive line was a total mess last year, like, yeah, terrible.
Which is you know, why they took a center, desperate need, and I think he's going to step up and be a big help to them. They still don't stand a chance doing anything, but whatever.
What big name veteran do you think will fall off this year? Oh, by the way, these questions are from Dynasty Reaper at Scott CA92380331. Damn, that's a lot of numbers.
Was it 331 or 332?
331.
Okay, I follow 332.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I know, and I'm way behind 336, so.
Oh. I'm so gullible. We'll start with you, Brian. Which veteran do you think could fall off this year?
Boy, oh boy. I mean, these are going to be hot takes. Honestly, Keenan Allen, a lot of that has to do with, your take earlier, Eric, you thought Phillip Rivers would take a step back. Phillip Rivers takes a step back, and so does Keenan Allen. And also, you've got an emerging wide receiver, in my humble opinion, in Mike Williams there. So, Keenan Allen.
Yeah, I'd go Rivers. Another guy that might surprise, Drew Brees. This is not my original take, but it's from a guy I follow really closely on Twitter, Chris Wessling. He's one of my favorite football analysts, works for the NFL Network. He thinks that Drew Brees had probably the worst games of his career from November on and played like a bottom five NFL quarterback. I went back on Game Pass and watched some of those games, and I kind of am inclined to agree. Drew Brees did not have a good playoffs, and he did not have a good rest of his season. He can't throw outside the numbers more than 40 yards anymore. I think that he's not going to fall off the face of the earth, but I think he's going to definitely take a step back in 2019.
You know, I'd agree with your Drew Brees take, Eric, just because I feel like – when you talk about the Saints, right, and I know this is a question we're going to get to in a little bit here, but when you look at the Saints, right, they got Michael Thomas, and then they got Alvin Kamara, and you just feel like these are the two guys that are just consistently the ones that Drew Brees will just dump it off to Kamara on a short pass, and Kamara just turns into something because he's a talented player. But, like, I just don't see Drew Brees having the impact on the Saints or for the Saints that, you know, he used to have like 5 or 6 years ago. And, you know, I'll answer Dynasty Reaper's question here. What big name bet do I think will fall out this year? I'm going to go with Matt Stafford, the quarterback, right? You know, I just watching the NFC North for so many years, every single year, it seems like this finally going to be the year where the Lions offense gets their crap together, and then it never happens. You know, Stafford's just super frustrating to watch because it's like he can come out and throw 5 touchdowns, and the next minute he can just look like he's lost. And then you have Matt Patricia there, who I believe is going to be fired by the end of the 2019 season.
All right. I would actually tend to agree with you on Matthew Stafford. I think the Lions are due for a major step back. I think it's a hot take, I know, but I think they're going to be picking in the top 10, in the top 5 next year. I think they are going to really fall off this year, and I don't think Matt Patricia survives this season, I'll be honest with you.
Let me just add one more thing on about the Lions before we go to Pierce. Right, the Lions added Kerryon Johnson last year, and he was being looked at as Alvin Kamara 2.0. I know his KJ's rookie season was cut short due to a knee sprain, but really, even in the games he did play, he just didn't seem like the super special guy. And, you know, whenever we talk about the Lions, it's just always the run game needs to get going, and it's been the case the last couple of years. And now that they have their supposed running back and Kerryon Johnson, quite frankly, Matt Stafford and the Lions offense, like, they're running out of excuses. And if the offense really takes a step back this year crashes like I'm expecting them to, then Stafford's going to be out of excuses. And we're going to have to start pointing the finger at him directly, because as a quarterback, you're the leader of a team. And when things don't go wrong, for the most part, you're the one who gets the blame.
Pierce, your thoughts on these questions.
Where am I? Am I here? What? Hey, yeah. So, all right, I'm staying in the AFC North. I think he's already kind of been failing, but I think Andy Dalton falls straight off into no man's land this year. The guy's a piece of trash, and he's going to be over, and I'm thankful for that, because that means the Bengals are just further in the crap hole, Go Browns.
All right. The next question comes from my friend Walter Robson, at Walter Robson 1, I believe it is, on Twitter. He asks, what is your fantasy, your personal fantasy record?
Oh, right. I got some of these.
Your odds to win this year.
It has to now, do with Oreos and Cocos.
I can't. What?
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 He asked what my greatest fantasies were. It has to do with Oreos and coconuts. Are you all talking right. about a different kind of fantasy, are you?
Yeah, we're talking about fantasy football. But hey, we can delve deeper into Pierce's weird fantasies if we really want to on the next episode of the End Zone Podcast. I would say that my fantasy record is never that good. I always overthink it, and I always end up sucking. So I will say I end up at – how many weeks is a fantasy season? Like 14, right?
Somewhere around there. Like I haven't.
I think I end up with, we'll say, seven wins. What about you, Brian? What do you think your fantasy season ends up like?
I don't know. 500.
Peanut butter and chip nooks.
I don't know. Fantasy football is always a crapshoot, in my opinion. People get hurt. Like, I still can't believe, Eric, that I won that fantasy baseball league that we did. Yeah. Fantasy is kind of silly to me, but.
Yet, it is very much what you're entwined into right now. I don't know. I would say there's not a bigger fantasy player I know than Brian Willis. All right. So I think, let me look. There might be one more question.
One more question. That's what they said before they chopped off his head. One more question now. Poor George is dead. Da, da, da,
da, da, da, da. Is that a real song?
It is right now. I just created it.
All right.
Top hit.
Okay, let's finish with a Broncos question. From you said, is Drew Lock the answer at quarterback for the Broncos? I'm going to say no. Everything out of OTAs has been that he's looked pretty terrible. Yeah, I don't think he's the answer, at least this year. I think he definitely needs a year to get better. But I will say no for this year.
Yeah, I'll answer my question, right, just for the listeners. But, you know, going just – see, this entire draft, right, it was like all about Kyler and Dwayne Haskins. And even before those two really got up there and started getting all the hype and whatnot, this was really a freaking weak quarterback class. Now, had the Broncos, or sorry, had John Gruden taken Drew Lock, or John Gruden, what the hell am I saying? John Elway. But anyway, they both suck at their jobs and they're both named John, so it doesn't matter. But anyway, listen, had Elway taken Lock at 10, I would have been like, yeah, Elway needs to be fired. But he took him in the second round, right? And they got Dalton Risner and Noah Fant, which were great picks, trading back with Pittsburgh. But the deal with Drew Lock is this, right, is number one, I agree with you, Eric, he needs another year. But, you know, the silver lining in the Broncos picking Drew Lock is that if he sucks, maybe the Bowlen family will finally come to their senses and just freaking fire John Elway. Because as a guy who's a Hall of Fame QB, like, he should know how to evaluate QBs. And he just has, you know, botched. He's just missed on so many QBs. Trevor Siemian, Paxton Lynch, you know, Brock Osweiler, obviously. Eric, I know you're shaking your head. Sorry that you have to hear this, right? But, Yeah, you know, they're just so, you know, always really sucks at evaluating QBs. So, yeah, I don't think Locke's the answer.
Who's the guy they cut for walking into a stranger's house?
Oh, Chad Swag Kelly.
Chad Kelly was the answer in Denver. And just because he got a little hammered and walked into a stranger's house, they released him. I think that's poor decision making yet again by John Elway.
Thoughts, Brian?
No, Drew Lock isn't the answer at quarterback. I think he could end up being an okay band-aid for the time being. But, I mean, that's also what you have Flacco there for, is that's your band-aid quarterback. So I don't know why you would
– 1 minute. Breaking news. All right, so joining us now on the podcast is my friend Walter to answer his question for me. What is my fantasy record?
Your fantasy record? Well, shoot, you got like 10 plays last year and you almost got an ass tag. So actually not that great.
Walter could have just called it the show. That would have sounded so much better, but whatever.
Well,
You do your job.
Well, I'm going to let Walter go. But anyways, hey, thanks for joining the show, man. You bet.
Well, that's real good. Take a call in the building. You are I can totally see why your podcast is better than mine. I figured it out.
Why?
Mid-show phone calls.
Okay. All right. So you know, just going back to a football here and the question, you know, going to go off a little bit of what Brian said, but you look at the way Elway just messed up the quarterback situation. I know I touched on a couple minutes ago, but like last year in the draft, he could have had Sam Darnold. And he had a choice between because there were reports of Elway loving Baker, Sam Darnold, and Josh Rosen. He could have taken Josh Rosen, who's an upgrade over any quarterback they have on the roster, honestly.
Fake news.
Because Rosen was talented coming out of UCLA, right? But he missed on that. And then, you know, you're looking at – they have Drew Lock this year on the roster, and Elway believes he's the answer for this franchise, which basically puts them out of the running for Jake Fromm, Justin Herbert, or Tua Tagovailoa in the 2020 draft. So Elway's basically with picking Drew Lock has got the Broncos, no pun intended, but the locked into Drew Lock for the next couple of years.
Not necessarily, because you saw what the Arizona Cardinals just did.
Yeah, I mean, look, if Rosen didn't exactly impress me in his 13 games he had in Arizona. Honestly, I'd pick Rosen over Drew Lock right now. So if there's a difficult trade market for Rosen, I think there's going to be an even worse one for Lock.
Here's the difference, though. Steve Keim and Cliff Kingsbury are open-minded. Brian. John Elway is not. He's not going to trade or admit he was
exactly,
wrong after
yeah.
1 year.
He might not be there, though.
That is a fair point. If he is not there, I would agree with you. I could see him going with someone else. Well, I think that's it. Pierce needs to go eat. And
Skitty.
We will hold.
We got a good question I think we should answer, though, right? From Chris Murphy, right? C. Murphy 187.
Oh, my boy Chris. How you doing, man?
I already don't like Chris. He's holding up my spaghetti situation.
Chris asks, right? He's like, will the Saints pay Michael Thomas or let him walk? In what's expected to be, I'm here looking at it right now, like a legendary free agency class.
I mean, that's kind of a dumb question. They're going to franchise him.
I mean, I'm going to go ahead and say this. They got Terry Bridgewater on the roster right now. He's their QB of the future, hopefully after Drew Brees. The Saints are paying Michael Thomas because they're not going to have – let's just say Brees retires in a year or two. They're not going to have Bridgewater step into a situation where there's not a number one guy there. And you know what? The Saints are one of the better-run organizations in the NFL. They always take care of their players. Mike Thomas is a saint for life.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to let him walk.
you know, the Saints, they had this all, you know, earlier in the 2010s, they were this great offensive team. They won the Super Bowl with a couple names that just can't remember off the top of my head right now. But Michael Thomas comes in 2016 and really was the guy that revitalized the offense. So he's too valuable for them, honestly. I'd go ahead and say this right now, and Saints fans are going to come after me, but I believe Michael Thomas is more valuable to the Saints at this point than Drew Brees.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
It might be the most obvious thing said on the podcast today.
Hot take. All right.
Hot take. It's obvious. Drew Brees is like on his last leg. He's at the end of his career course.
All right. Well, Brian, thank you very much for joining us. I'll start by thanking you. Hopefully, but things are going well in Wisconsin. And I know open gym volleyball starts soon, you told me. So hopefully you get out there and do some balling. Thanks again, you say, for joining us. Good luck at Starbucks. And Pierce, thank you very much for helping us out today.
That's what I do. Fat people are
great. All righty. We will see you guys in a little bit. I don't know when we'll have our next episode out, but hopefully you enjoyed this one. Thank you very much for listening. Peace out.
Later.
Follow us on Twitter at EndZonePod. If you have any suggestions, questions, or you just want to shout out on the pod, send an email to endzonepod@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. See you next time.